Remember, remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder, treason, and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot.
Everyone's asleep.
In the shadow of crime, resigned to be the victims of fear, of violence, of social impotence.
You step outside, you risk your life. You take a drink of water, you risk your life. And nowadays you breathe and you risk your life.
The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street, and there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it.
That is why we distance ourselves. That's why we make jokes. We don't do it because it's fun. We do it so we can get by. And sometimes because it's fun.
Your levity is good. It relieves tension and the fear of death.
Ladies and gentlemen, fellow slaves of the plantation, welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's Vinnie with a Y because it's the most important question. And Eastwood, like, go ahead. Make my news. It's the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? The Vinnie Eastwood Show. The only thing worse than the truth is Vinnie's jokes.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome and to one and all. I must very much apologize for the impromptu nature of this because it's daylight savings time. And I didn't know that, so I don't have my guest, and luckily we are on the right computer to do the recording, though, so I'm just going to waffle on air a little bit while I try and get my other guest sorted out, but coming up in the second hour we do have Richard Gage, fortunately for us. Hello, are you there? Ladies and gentlemen, I'm just kind of trying to produce my show an hour earlier than I thought I would have to. And doing pretty good considering the circumstances. Like, let's talk about the lighting, for example. Yeah. That's more light it. I'm talking about video production, radio production. Okay, there's a couple of things that need to really go into it, and I'm aware that a lot of the people who listen are actually interested in doing shows themselves and things of that nature. And I do have quite a lot of knowledge, or some knowledge in this area, about how to make stuff, considering I've made a few thousand videos, and I'm just going to rustle around and get everything right here, so it's going to be very unprofessional for a second. In this impromptu early bird daylight saving show. So who was I talking to? I was talking to, I believe it was Richard Gage. Okay, and we talked about this terrorism aspect and how Muslims are now greatly feared by people, you know, and I'm talking about, what's his name? Alex Ansari. Jesus, I don't even have my coffee, bro. One second, I'm going to yell for my coffee. And I want to get into that topic a lot more than perhaps I can, right? Because I don't have the stuff that's going on at all, right? Don't know what different cultures are up to and that kind of thing. And I'm guessing most other people don't either. You know, you ever been to the Persian Gulf? You know, you ever hung out with a shitload of people in an Iraqi school or something like that? Did you ever go to a madrasa? Or would you say that your knowledge of these perceived enemies is actually rather limited, and that makes it a hell of a lot easier to perceive them as enemies because you don't actually really know anything about them? Because information, being informed and realizing that we're all one and not able to be put into these certain groups, you know, where certain types of people are no longer human. That's the whole propagandist idea. It was Aldous Huxley said that the idea of being a propagandist is to convince people that then a certain group of other people are no longer human. And this is what I am hearing a lot from everybody, right? This fear, this division, this worrying about terrorism and stuff like that. And it's just like, bro, it's almost like you slept through the last 8 years. I mean, didn't you know 9/11 was an inside job? You know, the architects and engineers for 9/11 truth, 2,800 of them coming out, putting their careers on the line with nothing to gain to say that 9/11's like an inside job. The security for the World Trade Center being run by, what's his name, Jeb Bush, the brother of the then President George W. Bush, up until the day of 9/11. Okay, look, dude, the whole reason why people fear the Muslim terrorists and so on and so forth is because the media's hyping it up, and the media's owned by the military-industrial complex. So who do you think they're going to tell you the enemy is? Them? The people that are taking away your freedoms? The people that are advertising to you 24/7 with utter garbage? You think they're the ones that, yeah, they must be the ones behind everything. Yeah, I'm sure the mainstream media would tell us that. I mean, they're owned by them after all, and there's no such thing as a conflict of interest far as I can see. Is there anybody home? This whole concept of hate and being angry with each other and looking for a fight online, right? Like literally just making posts to get a rile out of people. It's trolling in general, right? But the whole world is now being trolled. Haven't you noticed? Right? Every single time anybody reveals anything damaging about their own personality or so on and so forth, they get ripped apart, right? They get all these mean and nasty and hurtful things said about them and to them through their Twitter and their Facebook and their YouTube comment sections and so on and so forth. And sure enough, all those people making all those nasty comments, zero subscribers, you know, no videos of their own. I got nothing. Like, literally. Imagine that. The only reason why somebody exists is not to create something. Not to be nice to somebody. But to be a dick to the people who are creating something. Right? Is that your plan? Have you got that idea from somewhere else, did you? Because it certainly wasn't inside some kind of rational thought, was it? I believe that many of us have a lot to offer the world, more than how we're currently valued and judged by those around us. Don't you feel that? Don't you feel misjudged, undervalued? You feel like people don't get you? It's because you've woken up somewhat, and you know that there's a rot going on, and you don't like it. Isn't that the whole run of the mill? I mean, bro, dig this. I have no idea who my guests are before they come on the show, generally speaking. Unless I've had them on before, of course. Why? Why do I do that? Because the conversations that come out of them are actually genuine. Because you're not coming in with there with some kind of agenda, with some pre-proposed questions. They're not on edge as though they're in the spotlight, in the hot seat, so to speak. They're here to just have fun, have a conversation. And that's when you get the best things out of people, when there is, in fact, some mutual respect and a little bit of fun. What's wrong with that? Apparently, there are some people who have a lot wrong with that.
Oh, I don't like this Finny Eastwood person. He's got a terrible sense of humor. He should be more serious like me.
Really? How's that working out for you? Not too well, eh? Working up another heart attack, eh? Had three bypasses surgeries already. Did you know that your IQ drops 10 points when you have heart surgery, open heart surgery? You didn't know that, did you? It's probably because your IQ dropped 10 points. You know how many heart transplants David Rockefeller's had? 8.
8!
All right. Just unfriggin' believable. It's like they're sacrificing swathes of slaves to keep the Dark Prince alive. Like, you get into this rut, okay, between being lovey-dovey with everybody and at the same time not being an idiot and getting sucked in all the time by things. And this is a real problem because, what was it somebody said? I think it was Steve Hughes, a comedian. He was talking about traveling in India. He said that people are very, very unknowledgeable about India, okay? And he says he prefers it to when he's traveling in America. Because in America, everybody's so nice, and everybody believes what you say. And everybody's, like, okay with each other and all of that. In India, it's not like that. You've got people coming up to you trying to scam you whenever you're walking, all the time. Trying to sell you something, trying to hustle you, trying to pick your wallet or something like that. You've actually got to be on your guard. You've actually got to be on your defense. And he liked that because all of the people around him had to deal with that. And they had that kind of awareness about the world around them, how much thievery, how much trickery, how much scumbaggery is there. But when we come home and switch on the television set, we believe that there isn't, it isn't there. You know, we believe when we watch our favorite shows that we're not being programmed by these programs, but we are. All of us are. Everything's a program to acceptance of some kind. Well, that's a bit of a generalization, isn't it? But, you know, I'm a talk radio show host. It's just what I do. Doesn't mean it have to be accurate. It's just an opinion, completely unsubstantiated opinion that everybody's being manipulated by ruthless criminal sociopaths with acute narcissistic personality disorder and a little bit of psychopathy. You know, I mean, what's wrong with that? I don't oh, God. Now, isn't it a frightening prospect? I got this whole concept for the Vinnie Eastwood show by the bull of the horns here because it's just like, bro, look, I am very, very, very aware that they're incredibly scary, sickening, and quite frankly, depressing things going on. And I want to understand that we have a chance in all of this, right? Some hope in all of this. That's what we want. Now, ladies and gentlemen, one moment, please. I'm just going to check on my guest. I am still on, aren't I? And we also bringing on Dave Von Kleist, I think, soon enough, which will be good. Mate, ladies and gentlemen, there was a genesis to the Vinnie Eastwood show, you know, somewhat of a biblical sense. But I wanted to say, I've just got to tell my guest, because he's supposed to, he says he'll be home in like 15 minutes, bro. All right, so we'll have him for about a half hour. Okay. Sweet. All right, now that that's all sorted, probably should have thought about all of this. You know, because I had a sneaking suspicion. I was like, is there a daylight savings going on here? You know, like when I woke up this morning. And the show goes on many, many hours after I've gotten up. So I could have, conceivably, obeyed that little instinct in my head, I call it the ping, and Googled up the time zones and things like that. But I didn't! And look what happens. You wind up with a show where you have to basically wing it and produce on air. Nobody to blame but yourself. I get with a few jokes, right? And it's like, in this... I don't know, this feigned hysteria about racism and so on and so forth. You know, I like to make really inappropriate jokes. You know, again, just what I do. What do you call an Arab tribal leader that's not too bright? A thick sheikh. You see? Because the sheikh is a tribal leader. You know? And what do you call a white tribal leader that has lots of guns? Sir. I said, that's right. I found that quite funny because I came up with it, and I find me quite funny. You know, whether you're laughing at me or with me, as long as you're laughing, that's the philosophy. Because it would be nice, I think, if people laughed a lot more. I mean, think about it. When you're watching the news and they're talking about this murder and death and suicide, and, God, it's just freaking depressing, the news, isn't it, bro? It's real depressing. There's not a laugh in there. I mean, at least with the murders and all these things that involve very sensitive subjects, they should at least have some kind of crappy pun in there. That's where I'm coming from. Look, just because there's terrible stuff going on and life is horrible and the world is like a boiling kettle of shit, then bro, I think we ought to have a joke or two about it. I really do think so. Because if you're taking things too seriously, you wind up getting very angry about everything all the time. And it's not good for you, bro. It's not good for your blood pressure. It is not good for your life. Right? It was an interesting time when I was interviewing Dr. Leonard Caldwell. He told me, you know, Vinny, what? He doesn't sound like that. But I'm going to do it anyway. You know, Vinny, most heart attacks happen between the hours of 8 and 9 a.m. on a Monday. About 60% of them. Whoa. And he goes, because people who are living a life that is not fulfilling them, that is not making them feel good, their heart knows that it's not good. And it would rather die than go to that job one more day. And it's like, whoa, that's freaking deep, man. Imagine that. You can't escape from your heart. Isn't that sad? Really? Think about it. If you know something in your heart to be true, you can't escape it. You know, you can drink and do so on and so forth, but you can't freaking escape it. There's no way, bro.
There's just no way.
You can't live a life like that. Because it'll kill you. Whether it'll give you cancer or give you a heart attack or just make you age faster and just not enjoy your existence. I mean, think about the main goal in life is to enjoy your existence. How many cells are there in your body that are independent traveling around? Roughly 5 billion of them. How many organisms are there on the planet? You know, maybe tens of trillions? Insects included? How many stars are there in the galaxy? There's 100 billion stars. How many galaxies can we see just from our Hubble telescope? Tens of thousands. You think about that, the scale. How big are you? How small is life? How unlikely is your birth? What was that from Monty Python? Just remember that you're standing on a planet that's evolving and revolving at 900 miles an hour. Oh, I forgot the rest of the lyrics, but it's a very, very good song, and you should watch Monty Python's The Meaning of Life, like I did the other day when I was trying to cheer myself up, wondering about the meaning of life. And I think they nailed it pretty well. There's a boardroom meeting. But I say there's only two topics on the agenda. Number one, people are not wearing enough hats. and number two, the meaning of life. Oh, yeah? So what's that about? It turns out that the human soul can only develop if it actually tries to. And people keep getting distracted and their souls do not develop. Oh. Now, what about those hats again? Yeah, Les, tell me more about the hats. Just think about the genius of a comedic profile like that, right? You're sitting there and you're going, okay, how do you actually explain not only the meaning of life to people, but the meaningless of explaining the meaning of life to people who are infinitely distracted? Who can't develop their soul? Imagine that. That there's actually a soul within your body that is either being hindered right now because of your actions or is growing because of your actions. Not because of your thoughts, but because of your actions. And tuning into this show is an action. All right? Tuning into anything is an action. Unless that thing you're tuning into is a distraction, you see. Because how many TV shows are coming out now? How many movies? How many sequels? How many prequels? The mind reels just looking at Hollywood alone. Right? Don't even think about the television. But how much of a complex group of people there is that need to make a film together. Right? And I was thinking about this like in a truth movement sense. So on a film crew, you know, you've got a city's worth of people, 5,000-10,000 people, and together they accomplish this enormous work of art called a feature film, which has a bazillion things that go into it, and it's sometimes very hard and frustrating and painful work to do, but they do it nonetheless, and they produce things that people love. Now, there's me on the other hand, and I'm just like working by myself, and it's like got the email back from Richard Gage's producer saying, oh, could you get your assistant to answer these brief questions about your show? I was like, my assistant? That's so cute. The thing that I'm actually getting help. I mean, it's like, I'm in New Zealand, bro. There's 4.1 million people, and there's nobody doing the YouTube videos and the radio and the web and the social media and all of that kind of stuff in a truther capacity. You know, like the real truthers who aren't actually buying into the left-right paradigm or statism or slavery or frickin' cult indoctrination. There's so much cult indoctrination, it's unbelievable. It really does drive me nuts, bro. I'm like going out of control. It's everywhere I look. It's like, oh, what do you mean? It's cult indoctrination everywhere you look. Okay. Have you ever been in a room full of people, away from your family and your friends and stuff like that, where you've got a central authority figure who speaks in a low, monotonous voice that's almost the same rhythm to a heartbeat, and you're under fluorescent lighting that's not too bright and not too dark, and have to do a whole bunch of repetition and get ostracized if you acted different to anybody else, and have rewards threatened to be withheld from you if you don't continue through with what the cult wants? Yeah? Been to school, haven't you? Well, most of us have. You know, even the ones that haven't gone to school have gone to a job, and it's more or less the same thing. Oh, you got to go on your training day. It's like an indoctrination school, man. Like, seriously. And what's very upsetting about that is the effect on the cult indoctrinated person to being told that they're a part of a cult. No, I'm not part of a cult. Yes, you are. You're part of the cult of the state. Okay? The state indoctrinated you. They frickin' warped your mind, bro. They killed your creativity. They charted your soul's course in a completely different direction. A very inferior direction to the destiny for which you were purposed. Is this not apparent? You know? Am I not getting through? All of us had our lives stolen from us. Okay? Back in the day when they first started up public school, which I hated pretty much every minute of, the United States actually had to send cavalry, all right, guys on horseback, to kidnap people's children and take them to school. That's the first public schools in America. That's how it actually played out. Why did they institute such a schooling system? Well, funny you should ask. You ever heard of the Franco-Prussian War? Of course not, because it was before World War I and before public schooling. Prussia used to be like Germany and Belgium and a whole bunch of other like frickin' countries or whatever, huge empire in Europe, right? And they had this big war with France, and they beat the pants off them, all right? You know, surprisingly, the French got beaten. But why they got beaten was not just because they were French. That's another issue entirely for another day. But public schooling was introduced in Prussia. And so when the call to war was issued, a whole bunch of freshly indoctrinated youth who'd been brought up by the state, without question, volunteered, stepped forward, followed orders, did everything they were told to by a central authority figure in a uniform, went through sleep deprivation, training camps, and things like that to break down the individuation of self so that you can't think, give you inadequate nutrition. You ever wonder why the school lunch shops and things like that don't have anything with nutrients in it? It's part of the cult indoctrination techniques, bro. If you've got enough nutrition, your brain can think. If you don't have enough nutrition, you can't. And thought, real clear-headed thought with a hell of a lot of sleep, is a cult's worst nightmare. Because only the times where you go, really, who said that? Oh, okay, when was that practice initiated? Oh, okay, and what kind of evidence do they have to suggest that this actually has any validity? When you ask questions like that, they're like, oh, well, blah, 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 blah. You can't think about that. We've got a claim of truth. We're the ones who are the arbiters of truth. I speak to God. Do you now? Well, what's God saying right now? Is he by chance saying things that are very, very convenient for you and your personal agenda? You know? Didn't people even think of that? And no, they didn't, because they got cult indoctrinated right before they even had a chance to think about what cult leaders are. They're narcissists and psychopaths. And guess all of these techniques that have been come up with to make people sleep deprived, make them nutrient deficient, make them not act as an individual and make them see them as part of a group. Okay? That whole process is a psychopathic and narcissistic control technique. All right? Unfortunately, yes, you were cult indoctrinated by a narcissistic psychopath. So was I. So was pretty much everybody else. You've been in the military, you've gotten the worst of it. Been in the intel community, whew, even worse than that. Getting into the secret societies and things, whew, there's another one again. Mate, it doesn't matter where you go. You're either one of the mildly cult indoctrinated people who maybe have some kind of individuality left that school didn't manage to destroy, or you're like most people, so traumatized by the things that they've been through that, just like Pavlov's dogs, a dog being electrocuted with a cage, no chance of escape. No matter how many times it tries to escape, the cage door's closed. Keeps getting electrocuted. So eventually, he stops trying. And even when the doctor opens the cage door, the dog just stands there and keeps getting electrocuted. We've been experimented on. You know, they've run tests and done studies and so on and so forth, best and the brightest or whatnot, to work out what makes us tick and how to make us march to their tune. What kind of value does individuality have when there is a reality like that? It makes me kind of sad. Does it not you? Do you not feel like there's a great opportunity in life that's been missed? Now, American Freedom Radio, Dave is home. Speaking of opportunities that might get missed. Dave Von Kleist is here. How are you, mate?
Well, I'm fine. How the heck are you? I haven't talked to you in, gosh, I don't know, maybe a year? How long has it been?
Oh, man, I've been off the air for near on 6 months, maybe since September last year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, man.
Well, cheers.
Cheers, brother.
Good enough.
Well, we were talking about the truth movement and things like that, and cult indoctrination, and how people get into these little niches of thought and whatnot. But I just want to introduce you first to the audience. Dave Von Kleist is a documentary filmmaker. He made the film 9/11 in Plain Sight. And he also is somewhat of a musician and has, in fact, come here fresh from the recording studio a half hour ahead of schedule to be here.
Did I interrupt something? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to...
No. It was actually my problem.
Because I just walked in the door.
I know. Well, we were live on air. On American Freedom Radio.
Well, that's way cool. Are we doing video as well?
Yeah.
Wow. Hey. Wow. Wow. No, okay, that worked.
Yeah. See, we live in a wondrous age, kind of like Total Recall. Now, Dave, if you wouldn't mind, we've only got, maybe about 25, 30 minutes left in the hour, and unfortunately that's all she wrote for this episode. But you were in some way responsible for the Vinnie Eastwood show coming about.
Say what?
yeah, exactly. It's an odd connection, but let me lay it out for you. Before the Vinnie Eastwood show, there was the Global Freedom Report. And before the Global Freedom Report, there was the American Freedom Report with Dave Von Kleist and Brent Johnson. And then you had to drop out, and then I came as co-host, and then Brent dropped out, and I became the host.
I see. Okay, it was an evolution then.
Yeah. Well, one can only hope.
Yeah, I can see that happening. I completely understand. I think you know that I understand, and probably understand maybe more than you think I understand.
More than most.
Okay.
So we're talking about this.
Drinking coffee or a mysterious cup.
Oh, it's definitely coffee, but the cup itself is coffee-colored or bourbon-colored, depending on your eyesight variance. Now, there is the other aspect of the truth movement itself, and I'm now seeing this pattern. I'm not sure if you're seeing it too or if anybody else is, but exactly what we were talking about 8 years ago with the releasing of mass surveillance and false flag terrorism and, like, hyping up of fear and so on and so forth, and a fractured, divided movements of people who are all at each other's throats left, right, and center. I'm seeing it happen again.
It's happening much more intensely now, because all the people that are joining into this political arena now, many of them have only been, shall we say, awakened, if they are indeed awakened, but they've only become politically aware in the past, say, 4 or 5 years, and that's all they know. And the point is that, as they say, if you don't, if you forget your history, you're destined to repeat it. But if you don't know your history in the first place, you don't have a foundation to build your schema of the world upon. And there's a lot of the stuff that's happened over the past several decades that a lot of the current protesters, whether they be Trumpaholics or libtards or whatever, because they're both sides is absolutely confused beyond description. It's like idiocracy happening before our eyes.
Mm.
And it's scary. You know, it's social engineering at its finest.
Mm. Now, Dave, you want to tilt your camera up just a little bit to get just the top of your head in there? That's beautiful. So I also wanted to talk about the what part music plays, right? Because my guitarist is outside, just strumming along. We're going to be going out mm-hmm. to a see him play tonight.
And, all right.
Just thinking about this, like, I'll be walking around the house, and I'll be frustrated about something or whatever, but then a tune will come in my head, you know, and it might not be my own tune where it might be, and I just start singing it out loud, and you know, whichever, and just start grooving to it. And I was thinking, is there a connection between the truthers who actually stay true and musicianship?
Well, I don't know. That's a very good question. I when I think of musicians, or the soul, the heart, the creative, spirit, I think that the people that are involved in the creative arts are less likely to intentionally deceive. I don't know if I'm putting that correctly, but, well, I know I can only speak from my point of reference. I've always been a musician. I've always been a singer and a guitar player. And I've always done radio and voices. And it was only, in the mid 90s that I started in earnest doing radio talk shows. Yeah, I think that that people that have a creative spirit, I suppose they tend to be more liberal, but I don't necessarily fit that mold. But I think that musicians are more honest. Yeah.
Now there's this concept I wanted to explore a little bit, was the drain of daily life, right? The drain of daily life and the liberation that music and just having a fun conversation can actually have, right? Because that's where the sources of inspiration tend to happen, isn't it? I think have innate abilities to connect to different, you know, sonic patterns, and they actually do have a visceral effect on your emotions and that kind of thing.
Absolutely. Music is, you know, they say music soothes the savage beast. Music speaks in a way that language can't. Music is universal, and it speaks to the soul. You know, and that's why they always say, sing the praises of God, whatever the religions are, you know, they all sing their praises, you know, and it's all about frequencies. It really is.
Like a good bus system. It's all about frequency.
Okay. Oh, boy. So, anyway, I'm back in the States here. I've sort of coming up on the ninth year of a self-imposed radio hiatus. Basically stopped doing that. That's why I said I'm back into the musical roots here. I left the 9/11 truth movement behind. I'm enjoying this. I mean, I'm watching sort of like on the sidelines of what's been going on.
It's quite funny actually, because guess who's on next? Richard Gage from Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth.
Well, you see, I've gotten a different perspective, okay? When I left the 9/11 truth movement, what I was seeing is the same thing that happens in whatever group or movement that there is. If you're, you know, speaking out against vaccines, or if your issue is chemtrails, or if it's global warming and stuff, it doesn't make any difference what your issue is. You know, whether it be 9/11 or the Waco thing or the Oklahoma City bombing, no, there are always infiltrators, and there are always those that are in the movement for the wrong reasons. There are people that want the praise, the ego stroke, the accolades. They want that plaque that hangs on the wall that says, you know, here's the so and so that brought us the real truth. And then there's the other people that want to sell their books or their videos, or they want to promote this or sell that. And when you get into that for the wrong reasons, whether it be ego or money, then you're simply in it for the wrong reasons. And unfortunately, that's happened to a good portion of the truth movement and a lot of the other movements that are out there. And then you add to that the government infiltrators, the instigators, the provocateurs, the rumor mongers, the gossip makers. And there are so many of those. There are people that have full-time jobs just doing that, creating personalities, going out and antagonizing somebody because they're a great radio talk show and they're getting too much influence. I mean, I've been through that myself. You know, just Google me and you'll find there's a website out there that says I've been working with the Nazis, and that was another group that said I was a CIA Mossad. Get this, a CIA mole. I was also a skinhead and a Nazi, And I was also a member of the Israeli Mossad. So, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff. Well, then there was a rumor that I was dead. Well, maybe I am, but but the point is that there are people out there that are designed to confuse people and to create division. And, you know, in here in the States, we've got the Republicans and the Democrats, the Hillary idiots and the Trumpaholics and all that stuff, you know. And this is all being done by design. This red versus blue. And I'm trying to, my only message right now is rather than look at all the differences that we have, let's get down to the real, real basic questions. Okay. Let's have somebody red over here and blue over here and say, okay, a Democrat, do you like war? No, I don't like war. Okay, fine. Do you like war, Mr. Republican? No, I don't like war. Great. Then you agree. You don't like war. Okay. Let's talk about, do you like forced vaccines? Do you like forced vaccines? No. Do you? No. Okay. That's something else we have in common. Do you like the system that we've got on a fiat money currency, whether it be in the United States or right over there in New Zealand or where all over the world over where they're doing fiat money? Do you like that? No. Do you like that? No. So the point is the big issues, the banks, the corporations, the corporate mentality of the Western world running everything. Everything is based upon profit. Forget people or progress or peace. If it doesn't make money, then they don't want to have anything to do with it. And that's one of the problems with our society. And I think we all recognize that, whether we be right or left or red or blue or Republican or Democrat or liberal or conservative, it doesn't make any difference. Point is there are some core basic things, human rights, human common sense, that we can all agree with. And if we can get those, get those issues to bring us together, all the rest of the stuff will fall into place. You take out of the loop, you know, the military industrial complex, you take out big pharma, you take out allopathic medicine, you take out the controls that we have on all of the foodstuffs, commodities, keeping prices up or down. I think a real good person to listen to would be Jacques Fresco from the Venus Project. And I realize that's utopian and it's idealistic, et cetera, but when you stop and think about it as a species, we really don't have much choice. We have to solve this problem or we are going to destroy the planet and ourselves. And that's basically it. I've gained a whole different perspective living out of the country and in South America. And the situation that I was in, I was lucky enough and privileged for the six years to meet probably 60 to 65 different families that had come to stay at this little farm that we were at. And they were from Italy, from Taiwan, from Australia, from New Zealand, France, England, all over the world, and gained a whole different perspective by speaking to these people about what their feelings are on not just the United States, but the entire Western mentality, the entire Western agenda. And the whole world, basically everybody that I've talked to, looks at the United States and the UK as being the maniacs who are running the asylum. And I don't know how we're going to get out of that. You know, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I took my chips and left the table, because I could see where we were going and what was happening to the real people who were in there for the real reasons, speaking real truth. And hey, I'm sorry. I'm no martyr. You know, it gets to a point in my life where I want to say, hey, wait a second. I did what I can. I threw it out there. It's up to somebody else to carry that torch, you know. Because sometimes it gets too hot to handle, if you will. But anyway, that's sort of my message. Everybody's got to come together. Am I running on too long?
No.
Okay. I just didn't want to turn it into a diatribe. It was
I wanted to insert a singular quote, you know.
A train of thought, I suppose, you know. Let's face it. We've been all raised and weaned on a steady diet of misinformation, disinformation, and lies. So why does it not make sense to understand that our opinions are based upon that misinformation, disinformation, and lies. And therefore, how good is our opinion if we base it upon that? We have to have an open mind. We've got to look and embrace the opportunity to be wrong about something, because that gives us, you know, an opportunity to grow. Now, there are two types of people in the world. People who have an exclamation over their head, an exclamation point, or a question mark over their head. People with an exclamation point know. They are confident in their beliefs. They know the truth. They know what, you know, and therefore their doors of information have closed. Okay? They're not going to grow anymore. Then there's the people with a question mark. And they're the ones who are saying, I don't know, but I'd like to know. And those are the people who are going to grow. And the only way we can grow is to admit to ourselves that we can be wrong. We have to recognize that we have to swallow our pride sometimes. And that's really hard for a lot of people to do. And to be honest, I would say 90%, if not more, I can't even make a guess, but most of the world has to realize that whatever their core beliefs are, they're based upon information that was given to them from early childhood. And we all know what social engineering does, and we all know what's happened to Western society with the advent of television surveillance, what's going on, you know, I mean, the stuff that's put out on Facebook and Twitter and all that social media. There's so much crap that's put out there to instigate and to mislead and to confuse. And that's where we are. Doesn't make any difference what side of the political spectrum that you're in. You have to be able to admit that, hey, look, at chances are I got some pretty screwed up core beliefs, and I have to have an open mind to be able to change them.
Mm. Well, what was it somebody said?
I went off on a tangent again. I'm sorry. You got to shut me down. Ask me a question.
No. It's my show. It's permitted. In fact, it's encouraged. It's kind of what it's for. It's just,
I suppose,
well, don't you think about that? Like, you could literally just sit there and rant on and actually talk about something that you really feel and you really think, without actually holding back and not stopping talking until you actually finish saying what you thought. Right. Is there anything wrong with that? I don't think so.
No. I try to use common sense and logic, and I know that that's, you know, a lot of people work off of emotions. And I suppose I do that to a certain level as well, but I like to use common sense. And I find it really interesting, as a matter of fact, you know, all this stuff that's going on here in the States, and they're talking about whether or not there was communication between Trump and Putin, and if there was collusion with Hillary and the Russians, and and I hear all of this stuff that's going on, and they're all saying that it's a conspiracy, but they don't have the evidence.
What I love is the article that came out that said that the CIA just got exposed in Vault 7 as having stolen Russian hacking techniques and were now and could now hack people and leave fingerprints to make people think it was the Russians.
Yeah. I mean, that's why you just can't believe everything that's going on. But the issue here is that, you know, they are all throwing accusations back and forth, and there hasn't been any evidence that's been produced to support any of these accusations. And the accusations are flying in both directions, from the Democrats at the Republicans, Republicans at the Democrats. You know, oh, he did this, or she did that, and they did this, but there's no evidence. So using that definition of conspiracy theory that we did so long ago, if there's a charge of a conspiracy to do something, but there's no evidence, that means by definition it's a conspiracy theory. And they are throwing openly conspiracy theories back and forth and in the mainstream media. I mean, it's so plain to see. But you can't talk about things like 9/11, because that's the real conspiracy theory, right? Anybody that doesn't go after the official story, you know, well, we all know how that goes. But there's, you know, conspiracy theories are now commonplace and accepted. So what can you do?
Well, one can only hope. I mean, I went to a party at my mate's place, kind of thing, and we played on stage for them and that kind of thing. They had one set up in their backyard. It was real cool. And after the thing, we went inside to have a few drinks, and one of the guys asked me what I do for a living, and I told him that I was a conspiracy theorist. You should have seen the blood drain from his face. And I can't believe that somebody would believe that there's such a thing as people working against other people without those people knowing about it. It just doesn't make any sense.
I know the feeling, believe me. I mean, I got one word for people like that. Next. Move on, you know. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him think.
Yeah. Well, my friend John Eisen used to say you can lead a horticulture, but you can't make her think.
Okay. Oh, a little shade of Liza Minnelli in there. No. I mean, Liza Doolittle. That's who it was. That's a little before your time, Eisen.
I wasn't even a zygote.
No, Eliza Doolittle, My Fair Lady.
Oh, yeah. It was a cup of tea. A cup of tea. No, it's a cup of tea.
The Rhine and Spain falls mainly on the plain.
Yes, I actually am familiar with My Fair Lady, but I got thrown off by the Liza Minnelli reference.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It was a slip of the tongue. I meant Liza Doolittle.
Yes. And not to be confused with Dr. Doolittle, who talks to animals. No, Liza Doolittle just doesn't talk very good England.
Well, funny, because Rex Harrison was in both of those films. What a coincidence is that? It's a conspiracy theory, I say.
Tangentry again. Have you heard of the Bacon Scale? All right. If you're in a movie with Kevin Bacon, you have a Bacon rating of 1. But if you were in a movie that somebody who starred in a movie with Kevin Bacon was in, you have a Bacon rating of 2, right? And they started actually rating these things, and it turned out that there's all these little seeming baby connections between Hollywood, all of its films, all of its actors, and Kevin Bacon to a certain degree. Uh-huh. And this was actually found out a different social study. They found that your entire social strata only goes 7 separations away before it encapsulates the entire planet.
Really?
All right? Yeah. All right. You can get in touch with anybody through 7 degrees of separation. And that's why the surveillance systems are now working so well, because they can look at your Facebook and then look at all the people you've been talking to and then look at all the people they've been talking to and so on and so forth.
Right.
So you go from 16 people to 2,000 people to 325,000 people to 1.8 million people, and you know, that kind of thing. And I was just wondering, what kind of ripple effect does that have in consciousness? If I walk down the street, And holding a sign saying 9/11 was an inside job, there might be a ripple effect from that in one person, perhaps, or even from this radio show. Somebody might wake up and go, and something I said or something you said makes them go, you know what? I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to stop being slave scum, and I'm going to start making some songs. No, you never know. You only try your luck. But but the whole point is, like, playing your part, not wanting to be the be all and end all, but just be me, right?
Sure.
That's
the
whole thing.
Who else can you be?
Exactly. We're all, everybody's trapped up, like, trying to be somebody else. Don't be somebody else. Be freaking self, because nobody can do that better than you. All right?
Yeah.
In one way that you are the best, you are you.
Okay. Every day and every way, I'm getting better and better.
Unless you're distracted.
Well, yeah, and it's so easy to be distracted in this crazy world that we're in right now. You know, I shake my head at the level of manipulation that's going on. And I know it's been going on for a long time. I mean, you know how long I've been involved in this. I mean, I grew up in the 60s in Greenwich Village. I was there for the protests and all that. As a matter of fact, my mom's boyfriend was marching, was in the march on in Selma. And there was a very famous photograph of a guy with a flag, a guy playing a drum, and a guy playing a flute. They were marching on the way to Selma during the when Martin Luther King was there. And my mom's boyfriend was the guy that was carrying the flag. So, I mean, I've been exposed to the counterculture and all that for, you know, since my childhood. And so, I mean, I have a little bit longer reference point than a lot of other folks. And it's baffling to see what's going on in the college campuses today and what's coming in with the millennial generation and what their core beliefs are and what they're basing their beliefs upon, and the sense of entitlement that they have. It's like we're in a very dangerous, dangerous place in our country right now. I hope and pray that there in New Zealand it's not the same.
But, No, it's not the same, bro. It's much worse. Now, unfortunately, we've got to go. The show is the show is over. So, ladies and gentlemen, yeah, it does. It's in plain sight.
Ooh.
Oh, it's a bad reference.
Bad reference. It's all right. I feel like it's a piece of political toilet paper stuck to my shoe, and it follows me everywhere.
One can only hope. Yeah. Thank you very much for listening, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you again sometime.
Thanks.
On TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com.
yes, I like very much
radio.
You're an American institution.
American Freedom Radio.
And I hope people support American Freedom Radio. And I hope people vote with their dollars and really understand the value of having American Freedom Radio. Because that's my family. If you love me at all, Jack Blood, support American Freedom Radio. Like, my family has literally disowned me in American Freedom Radio. Danny and Don and those guys, those are my actual family. So please, please support these guys because they have all the technology. They have all these great things that they're going to do, but obviously they can't do it all by themselves. So not only would I like to see you support them, I'd like to see you retweet them and repost them and really get involved and get on the bandwagon, so to speak, on doing that do-it-yourself promotion, because they're a do-it-yourself radio network, and we just need that so much.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. HempUSA.org introduces 3 brand new detox formulations of micro plant powder. Brain Fuel for depression, bipolar disorders, and stress. Total Care, anti-cancer agent that cleans the liver and organs and increases memory. Rejuvenate, invigorates and heals the body, mind, and spirit. These products are your alternative to pharmaceuticals. Call 888-910-4367 and like us on Facebook. We ship worldwide. Only at HempUSA.org.
We all know that they're not telling us the truth. So stand up for your rights, demand the real medicine, and your right to use it and grow it. This is Rick Simpson, and you're listening to American Freedom Radio.
You're listening to the future of talk. American Freedom Radio. This is American Freedom Radio.
The world is like a ride at an amusement park, and when you choose to go on it, you think it's real, because that's how powerful our minds are. And the ride goes up and down and round and round. It has thrills and chills, and it's very brightly colored, and it's very loud, and it's fun for a while. Some people have been on the ride for a long time, and they begin to question, is this real, or is this just a ride? And other people have remembered, and they come back to us, and they say, hey, don't worry, don't be afraid, ever, because this is just a ride, and we kill those people. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
What has American Freedom Radio ever done for us?
Provide us for free education?
Well, that's obviously effective, but apart from reversing the dumbing down of America...
All the information they provide is free?
What about the free podium for broadcast activists to speak from, man?
Exploiting commonplace corruption?
They help vulnerable people who don't have a voice?
Bringing light to important information nobody else does.
Well, they never sent Sir Hang Up or cut off the guests. Well, that's not fun, is it?
Oh, they created a fantastic alternative media source during an era of bad, manipulative, and infiltrated mainstream and alternative media shills and scum.
Okay, well, apart from the free education, free information, free podium for broadcast activists to speak from, exposing commonplace corruption, helping vulnerable people without a voice, bringing light to important information nobody else does, and creating a fantastic commercial-free alternative media source in a sea of bad, manipulative mainstream and alternative media shills and scum, what has American Freedom Radio ever done for us?
Donate to American Freedom Radio today.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics, no taboo topics, no fear of doom, no fear of doom. We are American Freedom Radio, American Freedom Radio.
Remember, remember the 5th of November, the gunpowder, treason, and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgotten.
Levity is good. It relieves tension and the fear for death.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and check out the archives there. Bear in mind, this is a listener-supported network and a listener-supported show. So go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, respectively, and start donating a dollar or more a month today. Because think about it, ladies and gentlemen, we give it to you all commercial-free. We're not annoying, are we? And we give you the archives for free as well. That's not annoying, is it? We make sure that your life is as free from the annoyance of your slave existence as humanly freaking possible. Now, speaking of our slave existence, the big, big terrorism attack of 9/11, and I use the word terrorism operatively, meaning it's a form of governance whereby you shock and terrorize your own citizenry into getting them to do what you want them to do. And it seems to me, and a recent article that seemed to have come out to confirm this, that Americans in particular, but to a lesser extent the entire world, are suffering from a form of post-traumatic stress. In many cases, complex post-traumatic stress. What does that mean? Well, it means that you're dealing with a global population who are so traumatized from such an event that their behavior will be modified instantaneously to make them try their hardest to avoid that trauma and avoid looking into it. All right? You see how that works? You understand how difficult 9/11 truth has been to put out there to a population suffering from that kind of subset of disorders? Good luck, buddy, they say. Hey, but people do come out, and people are waking up. Thanks in no small part to my guest. Richard Gage is a San Francisco architect, worked for 28 years, and used to earn over $100K a year, used to vote Republican, and now he's touring the world, having phone books thrown at him by angry crowd members of the Jewish Mafia. So architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth is the organization that he does a lot of speaking for, and he's been traveling all around the world. He's come to New Zealand, to Auckland and Wellington, where he spoke at Te Papa to a really, really great audience. And he is presenting in mostly the presentation, The Architecture of Destruction. We're looking, just as an architect or an engineer would, at how the towers came down. Was it a controlled demolition, or was it two planes? No? Right, okay. Now, Richard, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinny.
I want you to give me your rap on just the recent, not talking necessarily about 9/11, but talking about the post 9/11 world as you currently live in it, and considering the evidence you know about Muslim extremists involved on 9/11, whether or not there were, and the current, Muslim ban and all of the political ramifications around that. I mean, are the American people being told to be afraid of the right people here?
Well, it all goes back to the evidence, and that's where I start, Vinny, because you look at the actual evidence for the destruction of all three of these World Trade Center skyscrapers on 9/11. And that's what we've been doing for 10 years with Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. We now have 2,800 architects and engineers calling for a new investigation of this destruction. I mean, if 2,800 architects and engineers told you that your house was in danger of collapse, would you listen to them? Think about this. This is an extraordinary number of people staking their reputations, putting them on the line with nothing to gain. People call people names who speak unpopular truths. And we're accustomed to that, but we keep on keeping on. We've given more than, about 600 presentations now in more than 40 countries and more than 90 American cities to groups of 100 to 4,000. And we always get a show of hands, usually 90 to 95% say, yeah, we got to have a new investigation. Absolutely. After looking at this evidence, most people are completely unaware, for instance, that there was a third tower that came down on 9/11. And it's like, what world am I living in? This alternate reality. And so I always start people off with the truth about what happened. And this is actually acknowledged, by the media. Once you get them talking about it, but they don't talk much about it. The government doesn't talk much about it. Architects and engineers are mostly unaware of the third worst structural failure in modern history, this 47-story skyscraper on 9/11 in the afternoon after the Twin Towers came down about 7 hours later. This high-rise, steel frame high-rise, drops like a rock straight down suddenly, symmetrically, in under 7 seconds. This is, of course, in the exact manner of a classic controlled demolition. So we know, just looking at it, once architects actually see it, we go to the conferences and we encourage them to actually look at this video and tell me what you're looking at. They all say controlled demolition, of course. Well, did you know that NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, who was tasked by Congress to explain all three collapses to the American people, claimed seven years later, when the official report came out about this building after everybody kind of forgotten about it, that it came down by normal office fires. Now, normal office fires has never brought down a skyscraper at any speed, much less in under 7 seconds. After witnesses hear explosions, with the FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Association, giving the initial report that came out in May of 2002, which NIST took over and came out with their official report like 5 years after that. But the original report by FEMA documents in an in-depth metallurgical analysis of the few pieces of steel that were saved, because the rest of them were shipped to China for recycling before investigators could get their hands on it and analyze what happened to this steel frame structure. Well, this is the illegal destruction of evidence in a crime scene. But the few pieces of steel, they have documented hot sulfur corrosion attack on the steel, molten iron, and partially evaporated the ends of these beams, says Jonathan Barnett, who authored part of this FEMA report and metallurgical analysis. So here we have the evidence of incendiaries. Thermite is an incendiary used by the military to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter. And this is the evidence of not just ordinary thermite, which produces molten iron at 4,000 degrees, but the evidence of thermate, a very special form of thermite, where sulfur is added. So this is the explanation of the presence of sulfur, which is the deepest mystery, according to the New York Times, found in the debris pile.
The very small debris pile for the 100-story buildings that were just like not there anymore.
Well, we get over to the Twin Towers and we do have 110 stories, and yes, that you'd expect a pile of 110 concrete floors at the bottom of these, you know, stacked up 20, 30 stories tall. But no, we don't have one, not 50, not 10, not even one acre in size concrete floors at all. The concrete is not found down below. There's only a 2-story pile of core columns and perimeter columns. The rest of these columns are distributed around a 12 or 1400 square foot diameter, 12 or 1400 foot diameter area.
Yeah.
And the concrete is pulverized in midair to 100 micron particles, spread like a blanket throughout all of lower Manhattan. It's incredible.
And it was full of asbestos too, and a hell of a lot of health problems have come out of lower Manhattan and a whole lot of the first responders who were stuck in that stuff.
None of which would be there if these buildings were not explosively blown up. And that's exactly what the videos show. Because we're told, you know, that this 15-story section in the case of the North Tower, above the point of jet plane impacts, we're told that due to structural weakening by fire, the columns gave way, and this top portion drove the rest of the building down to the ground and then destroyed itself. Now, all this happens in under a dozen seconds, and that's just ludicrous because the top portion of the building is the lightest. It's like a Volkswagen crushing a Mack truck. It just doesn't happen because there's an equal and opposite destructive force, according to Newton's third law of motion. So you can't have the upper, lightest part destroying the whole intact, cold, hard steel below as if it weren't even there, especially 100,000 tons of structural steel.
Yeah, it'd
it
be
just
like
could never happen.
If you were standing still and somebody cut off your blade with like a really sharp sword, right, and the weight of your head pulverized your body on the way down, right? There is like that level of stupidity.
Exactly. Or tree, you know, the top part of a tree crushing the rest of the trunk after it somehow begins a break up above. No, it's going to fall off. And that's exactly what you have in the case of the South Tower. It actually begins to fall off. But then you have asymmetrical damage from the airplanes and asymmetrical damage from the fires and asymmetrical loading from this top part in the South Tower, the 30 stories above the point of jet plane impacts in that building, that are starting to fall over. But then it drives straight down, disintegrates first. But then the destruction goes straight down symmetrically, like these firefighters described, dozens of them. Like a belt. All these explosions going all the way around the building. They talk about these explosions. I mean, dozens and dozens of witnesses of explosions.
Well, you're just breaking up there just for a second, Richard. And I want to actually illustrate some of the things that you've pointed out there. So the tower
are
tilted. The tower tilted.
The official.
And then as it fell, it basically got turned into atomized dust, right? Before it even hit the ground, before you even see it start to really fall. And on top of that, you've got all these firefighters going, yeah, and then we came down to the bottom floor and there was another heavy duty explosion. And the guy's like blood running down his face and stuff like that. Yeah, man. And we were moving up that way, right? And then there were like three big explosions, like boom, boom, boom. And Willie Ramirez, I think it was, who was working in the, as a janitor in the basement.
Willie Rodriguez.
Willie Rodriguez. He said there was an explosion so hard that it pushed us upward, you know, and we were in the basement. It's just like, whoa, holy hell. There's anywhere you look.
If you look
at the 9/11 official story, there's nothing holding it up. Just like, apparently, nothing was holding up the towers. It's just like, no. We put them together with popsicle sticks and super glue, bro. You know, that's just what happens.
Well, that's what they claim, that it was shoddy construction. But even NIST says that the buildings were robustly engineered. So they don't fault the engineering of the building at all. What they fault is the lightweight steel trusses having been, the fireproofing having been knocked off of them by the impact of the airplanes, which is not proven, nor is the subsequent hypothesis or speculation that the floor trusses sagged under because of the fires underneath them, and then that pulled in the perimeter columns, and that's what caused the columns to break. But what the videos clearly show is the antenna, huge antenna on top of the North Tower. It falls more than 10 feet prior to the perimeter of the building descending, which indicates, because it's sitting over the core columns of the beam of the building, that the core columns are what actually gave way first, which then pulled in on the floor trusses, which would have then caused the inward bowing of the perimeter structural steel columns, and then caused them to fail. So that's a completely different hypothesis than NIST claims, which proves that the core columns were taken out first, and that below the level of the jet plane impacts. So that's what the evidence proves. The pools of molten iron found in the debris pile, flowing like lava, says the first responders in one of these dozens of
quotes. It was like you were in a foundry.
Yeah, exactly. That's the quote there, and it's extraordinary. And there's even Leslie Robertson, the structural engineer who designed the towers, is a witness of the molten iron. He calls it molten steel, as do the others, because they can't really tell the difference. But tests later proved that it's molten iron, including tests by FEMA.
And that guy, the designer of the towers himself, said it was designed to take the impact of an airliner, even two or three. He said that the damage of the impact from a jet plane full of fuel would be like putting a pencil through a mosquito net and doing that much damage to the overall structure.
Oh, yeah. These are highly redundant structures. The exterior is a Varandale truss with vertical 14-inch square steel tube columns tied together with horizontal 1-inch steel spandrel panels. This is an amazing exterior structure. There's been nothing like it before or since the Twin Towers. And that's exactly true. The forces routed themselves around the hole in the building made by the plane.
So think about that, ladies and gentlemen. If somebody, like, I don't know, puts a pencil through your mosquito net will turn into atomized dust. All right, that's the logic.
Yeah, just about. It's pretty incredible. Both of these towers, all three of these towers, descended at near free fall acceleration, as fast as a bowling ball falling out of the sky. Now, that's through more than 200 and I forget how many columns, a huge number of structural steel columns, the building's going faster and faster. The steel is not even slowing down the rate of descent, so they must have been removed. Well, the only thing that can do that is cutter charges, and we appear to have the evidence, well, we clearly have the evidence of explosive cutter charges and incendiary cutter charges as well. Incendiaries work by means of heat. That's what thermite Yes.
And by evidence of this, you're talking about the photos that came out after 9/11 of some of the remaining support struts that were there in Ground Zero that had perfect 45-degree cuts across them with melted iron coming down, like dripping down off the cuts.
Absolutely. This is directly indicative of a controlled demolition. That's what they do because you don't cut the columns horizontally because they'll just kind of stay there in an awkward fashion. The building will start to tip over. You do it at a 45, and then you apply, even then, a kicker charge to knock the columns off of the piece below that they've been cut from.
So if you've got two things that are stuck together, the only way to really get them not stuck together, considering they're, they're connected on so many ways, is to cut a wave right between them and then set off an explosion to force them apart.
Yeah.
All right.
And, yeah, you have and to do there, this, there are plenty of columns.
And you have to do this many, 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 many times to take out even a moderate-sized building, let alone, like, virtually the largest buildings in the world. Right? How many times would you have to do that? Which leads me on to the stories of these unbadged work crews in white coveralls that were visiting the towers, dragging cables and stuff all throughout the hallways. Everybody's like, what the hell are these guys doing? And they're like, oh, we're just upgrading the internet, you know, that kind of thing. And it's like, well, where are your name tags? Where are your security badges? Why, how come you don't have any, corporate insignias on your white coveralls, bro? Like, why are there so many of you? And why are you all coming down all the elevator shafts and all of that kind of stuff? Oh, no, we're just doing our job. Oh, okay, that's all right. No questions.
Well, we certainly want an investigation of the security company under whose noses all these people would have had to have.
Now, by
been,
chance, was that was that security company by chance run by the brother of the then President George W. Bush, Jeb Bush, until the day of 9/11?
Yeah, that was Securicom Stratasec. And I mean, we're talking about dozens and dozens of tons of thermite and nanothermite that we need investigation of. I mean, there was an elevator modernization who had the ACE elevator actually had this contract with 85 employees in the towers at the time that they were hit by the planes. And they were working on this largest elevator modernization in the world at the time here, and they fled when the planes hit the towers. This was quite a scandal, actually, documented in USA Today in October of 2001. So we certainly want an investigation of ACE Elevator, Securicom, Stratasec, the security company, that is, and yeah, and even everybody on the board of that company whom you just mentioned. This is really important stuff. Of course, AE 9/11 Truth. We are technical building professionals. We're not criminal investigators or journalists. This is an investigation that really requires the will of a body of people who are not compromised, justice officials who are willing to follow the evidence wherever it leads, and some of it leads in damning places. For instance, a small team of scientists led by Niels Harrit in Copenhagen and Stephen Jones in the U.S. They document throughout all the World Trade Center dust these red-gray chips. Red on one side, gray on the other. They are ubiquitous. They're everywhere. They thought they were paint, because it kind of looks like paint. It's dual layered. But they zoom in and do an electron microscope analysis, XEDS, actually, X-ray energy dispersive spectroscopy. They find that these chips have the ingredients of thermite, iron oxide, and aluminum powder mainly. But this is fascinating. So they zoom in 50,000 times into these chips that they find in all the dust samples, independently collected, eight of them all together. And these red gray chips, they put them in a differential scanning calorimeter, and they ignite at 420 degrees centigrade, about 800-900 degrees Fahrenheit. And when they do, they produce what? Iron microspheres. Previously molten iron microspheres.
Strange coincidence here, because downtown Denver also lights up at 420 because they just legalized weed.
Oh, I see. That's pretty funny. More interesting to me, and perhaps your listeners, I don't know, is the reality that the U.S. Geological Survey and R.J. Lee doing toxicological studies and all this dust throughout the lower Manhattan finds billions and billions of these same previously molten iron microspheres. So here, independent studies by officials find this curious, unexplained iron microspheres, and yet they can't explain where they came from, but they're so ubiquitous that they basically say it's a signature component of this dust. It's not even World Trade Center dust unless it has all these spheres, but they have no idea where they came from. And yet here these red-gray chips are put in a heater, and they produce the same exact spheres with the same signature as they tested. So we know exactly where those spheres came from. In fact, they're found attached to partially ignited red-gray chips in these samples as well. So we know exactly where they came from. So this is an internally consistent, self-corroborating set of experimental data that could put a lot of people away for a long time.
All right, so we're talking, let's not talk about the speculations. Let's talk about who could actually get a hold of this technology, and that's military intelligence we're talking about.
It's highly advanced defense contracting manufacturers, at least. So we certainly need an investigation of who can make this stuff. It's called nanothermite or superthermite. It's been studied before 9/11. It was developed. It's pretty.
What do you mean? It was
confidential stuff.
What do you mean it was developed, like by Skunk Works or something?
It was developed actually by NIST, interestingly enough, and Los Alamos.
Oh, the plot thickens.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and guess what? NIST brought in to control this investigation early on people from SAIC, a defense contractor like Foreman Williams, from that company, who himself was involved in the development of super thermites. So they could easily have found it. Of course, they weren't looking for it, apparently.
Either that or the people who could have found it were the very people who were actually picked to do the investigation and the and whatnot, because they know that if they find something, it's on them. So they choose not to find something. I think it was Mark Twain that once had a great saying. He says, a man will not be able to understand something if his income depends on him not understanding it.
Yes, exactly. I remember that quote.
So we talk about this this whole idea of coordination. So if you've got the was warned about in the 1940s by, I think it was Eisenhower, about the unwarranted influence whether sought or unsought by the military-industrial complex. Now, a lot of people, these are new words. What's military-industrial complex? Well, basically, when World War II happened, you needed to create a whole bunch of tanks, planes, and drugs, and uniforms, and so on and so forth, all of a sudden, from the Depression to wartime in a flash. So an enormous amount of companies with an enormous amount of money flourished in that environment. And after the enormous threat of World War II was gone, those companies were still there and started to choose to manufacture threats and make people afraid of those threats so they could justify creating more wars and keeping in business, more or less.
Yeah, and this is one way to do it. It's called a false flag operation. And there have been dozens and dozens throughout history. In fact, almost every war has been started with such a false flag operation. The Vietnam War is a classic example with declassified material showing that the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which started that war, never even happened. It was fabricated in order to get us into that war.
And it was, well, interestingly enough, fabricated by the father of Jim Morrison from The Doors. And it turns out a lot of incredibly famous big bands at that time, their lead singers often came from military intelligence families.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of that correlation, but it is.
Well, it's let's say you've got a military industrial complex that includes the media and the entertainment industry. Put your own people into the heads of it, and voila, you can control public consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like The Doors. I enjoyed their music. As dark as it was, The Doors.
You're all a bunch of fucking slaves.
Yeah. Was that from Jim Morrison?
Yeah. He said that at a concert once, and everybody got real pissed off with him.
Oh, well, he was telling a little bit of truth there, though, wasn't he?
Yeah. And
apparently.
And isn't it interesting that people who start telling the truth and stuff like that, they wound up dying in some cases, because the truth's a real hard thing to take, and a lot of people don't like taking it. And I found this great quote on one of my Facebook friends, Wall Today, from Banksy, the street artist from London. And he says, if you're feeling really tired of it all, find a way to rest. Don't find a way to quit, because it just keeps going,
that's good,
doesn't it?
I have to remind myself about that, too. I've been at it 10 years, and, you know, we're making progress, but it is slow. We've now got a study being conducted by Professor Leroy Halsey, one of the top forensic structural engineers in the country, from the University of Alaska, who's conducting a two-year computerized finite element analysis of the World Trade Center 7 destruction to show what did or didn't happen to it. And our supporters are funding this incredible study that NIST said they were going to do, but didn't. They produced a very, very fraudulent computer analysis whose animated model looks nothing like the destruction of the World Trade Center building 7. And so within 3 months or so, it will be done, and we will its results in a peer-reviewed study and marketing and press releases will go throughout the academic and professional communities. We expect it to wake up a whole bunch of sleeping architects and engineers, as we are doing also with our efforts at conventions, local and national architecture and engineering conventions. We show, as the professionals walk by, I myself, an architect with the American Institute of Architects, and joined by others, we have about 200 AIA members, we show the unsuspecting architects this collapse, and we say, what does that look like to you? And they say, oh, that's a controlled demolition. We go, well, yeah, we certainly agree. Did you know that happened on 9/11? You know, this is Building 7 going down. There's about 11 videos showing how it came down. And they go, what? Yeah, there was a third tower. Did you know that? No, didn't know anything about it. Most of them say that. And it's amazing. I mean, this should have been the most studied failure, because, you know, no plane hit this Building 7. It's about 300 feet from the North Tower. It shouldn't have gone down in 7 seconds. And they go, wow. This is unbelievable. So we get them to sign our petition, most of them, and a resolution, which we're putting before the 400 of the top architects in the country in management positions at the annual convention in Orlando at the end of April this year. And it'll be the third resolution we've had calling upon the AIA to call for a new investigation of the destruction of this tower based on this evidence for controlled demolition. And we got only 3% of the vote the first year, but we got 12% the next year, and we hope to get 20 or 30% this year. So it's on a good trajectory to waking up architects.
Well, mate, that's really, really good. Well, there's another thing I want to stay here and also stress to people who also want to spread the truth about 9/11, is that you won't wake people up right away. Okay, it takes several hours of looking through the evidence to, you know.
Sounds like you're speaking from personal experience there.
But somebody named Dr. Rima Labo told me about this phenomenon called the seventh man. And the theory holds that if you have a very deep-rooted belief structure, like the government doesn't want to exterminate or enslave me, and somebody comes along and says something completely contrary to it, you'll instantly fold them off and no reaction whatsoever. The idea will dissipate into nothing. And same with the second guy and the third guy and the fourth guy. But by the time the seventh guy comes to you and says that same thing that was completely contrary to your current beliefs, all of a sudden the idea will stick more likely and you will begin to then change those beliefs. Now, how that works in practicality is if I go and see somebody and say 9/11 is an inside job, they say, nah, fuck off, Vinny, you're a conspiracy theorist. And then Richard goes up to them and says, you know, 9/11 was controlled demolition. Ah, fuck off, you're a conspiracy theorist. But by the time somebody else comes up and says it again, they might wake up to the truth. Right now, the key here is, ladies and gentlemen, play your part. All right? You see something, say something. But say the truth, you know? Don't just let it go by the wayside. Oh, they might judge me. They might think I'm doing anything. Look, if you tell the truth and you stand in the truth, it doesn't matter what arguments people have against you, because you're right and they're wrong. You're right and they're wrong. It's just that simple. I just had to get that out because it was something Bill Hicks said on a comedy sketch the year before he died. You're right, they're wrong. Get over it. Just accept it.
Because it can be a lonely rollout here for those of us who are aware that this evidence obviously leads to the conclusion that 9/11 was an inside job. I mean, Muslim hijackers or, you know, some shadowy group didn't sneak into the towers in the months before 9/11, probably, and plant thousands of cutter charges throughout the columns and beams in this building and the other.
Allahu nanothermite! which means nanothermite is great in Arabic, by the way.
Cute. And Building 7, of course, which was occupied by the CIA, the IRS, the Department of Defense, the Securities and Exchange Commission. You know, these are highly secure operations. You're just not going to be sneaking in there like this without cooperation from security. Of course, we want an investigation of security. So we're not talking, to answer your original question of an hour ago, we're not talking about, in all likelihood, Muslim hijackers. So the entire Muslim world, or a good percentage of it, has been vilified and laid to blame for the destruction of the Twin Towers when it couldn't possibly have been them. They're patsies, these hijackers in flight schools who failed Cessna Flying School are all of a sudden doing these incredible maneuvers on these airliners that most pilots say they couldn't even hit, for instance, a 200-foot-wide target at 500 or more miles an hour. That's like impossible. They just don't have that kind of accuracy. So these planes, the witnesses show, most of the witnesses show these planes were really military style aircraft or retrofitted with highly maneuverable apparatus. If you watch their incoming flights to the towers, they do these subtle, very quick adjustments that only, you know, something like almost like a fighter jet could accomplish. Airliners do not.
Now, there's a friend of mine, he once lived next to a really major airfield. I think it was in Wisconsin. And one night he goes out with his girlfriend. He doesn't know why he went out. But he just grabbed her and then drove around. And they're driving next to this airfield and they were seeing these, big cargo planes, lots of them, coming in and landing and then taking off, and another one coming in right after it and landing and then taking off. They were all on remote control, bro. And they were in perfect unison. And I was like, whoa, that's freaky, man. He's like, yeah, bro, right. Scared the hell out of me to see that kind of thing happening. And
how did he know they were remote control?
Because to have something like 10 to 20 pilots all operating huge cargo planes and doing loops and coming in tandem jumping and things like that into the airfield didn't make any sense why the pilots would be training to do that, because you can't have any purpose for that. You know, you come in, you land, and you take off, right? Maybe one plane at a time. It's too dangerous to have too many of them coming in one after the other, after the other, after the other, with maybe 3 to 4 plane lengths in between them, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, in Operation Northwoods, which was declassified, this was a operation that JFK himself turned down. He said, no, CIA, you guys are crazy. You want to start terrorist campaigns in America. You want to hijack airliners and you want to blow them up over Cuban airspace. You want to remote control them into that Cuban airspace and then blow it up and then blame it on Cuba and then launch a war in there. No, I'm not going to send in troops to support your bear pigs. No, CIA, I'm not supporting it. Boom! Back into the left. Boom! Back into the left. Boom! Back into the left. That's how that works.
Yep. I gotcha. Yeah, this is JFK, of course.
Yeah.
And he also was challenging the Federal Reserve and as well as the CIA. I mean, he was the people's president, and now we know what happens to people's presidents. And I'm concerned about our current president, and because the establishment seems to be intent on destroying him. So the enemy of my enemy is my friend. That's the way I approach my relationship with the current president.
What was interesting is that quote was from a former Persian dictator who was beheaded by his own subjects.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You can't make this shit up, bro. What was it I said on a show the other day? Some of the worst things in the world are usually things we're doing right now, and we don't even know that we're doing it.
Wow.
Yeah. And this comes down to this whole question. There's this fear and this divide and conquer sort of paradigm that's coming up to a hype now. I mean, I've been ignoring the news for a year, so I'm just speaking it like I don't know, like a bystander in just what other people are talking about as they come into my life randomly. And it's fear of the Muslims, hate the Muslims, you know, like this kind of thing. It's like escalating right up. And I'm like, well, where's the justification for this? I mean, look, the initial justification is always and has always been 9/11, isn't it? You know, just hate them, you know, because they're enemies that you don't know nothing about, don't speak their language, aren't familiar with their culture or anything like that. So it'll be easy to learn how to hate them, all right, because you know nothing about them. Right? And that's the thing. It's so much easier to hate someone if you don't know them.
Yeah, it is. It's a problem. And the right falls into this, of course, more than the left. And yet, if the right knew, you know, that they could not have been responsible for 9/11, I think there'd be a lot of crow that would be eaten here by the right. I don't know what it is. We have to wake up, of course, the left and the right, and both are manipulated by these seemingly diametrically opposed forces, Democrats and Republicans, which are so so closely associated, and the strings are pulled by those forces who brought us 9/11.
Well, in fact, there was another thing I wanted to talk about. Who's the country in the world that hates Arabs more than any other country in the world? Israel. Boom. Right there. and I was just thinking about, what was it? Zenith Shipping is an Israeli shipping company. They moved out of the World Trade Center, I think it was the week before 9/11, and they broke their lease. Right? Now, in your investigations, have you seen any indications of Israeli involvement? Now, there was one thing here, is that if you stand an Israeli and an Arab next to each other, they're actually quite difficult to tell apart, you know, unless they're wearing a traditional dress of some description. And when you're speaking Arabic or when you're speaking Yiddish, it actually appears very similar as well, because it actually came from a similar part of the world. And what one documentary I saw was telling me is that alleged people on these hijacked airliners were talking about is what they perceived as to be Arab hijackers who were actually Israeli Mossad agents. Just a little thing. Yeah.
Well, so they heard these, but we don't know that was actually going on the planes.
Yeah.
It was just going on, and somebody heard it over some media, airwaves or radio or whatever.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Telephone.
And then you have the van full of explosives with a Jewish guy inside it that was parked on a bridge real close to the thing on 9/11, and the three Israeli students who were jumping for joy and filming the whole thing taking place while the attacks were going on. There's a lot there. But again,
that's the urban moving systems. I think you're referring to there with whether there's five dancing Israelis who turn out to be Mossad agents. They were on TV saying, yeah, we were there to document the event. Oh, you mean you knew about it in advance?
Whoa. All right. So now think about this. What happened after 9/11? Who got taken out first? Afghanistan pipeline deal. What was it? UNICAL, former advisor to UNICAL, Hamid Karzai, became their new prime minister. And who was UNICAL affiliated with? Arbusto Oil, which is owned by the Bin Ladens and the Bushes.
Yeah. Well, more interesting than that to me was just a kind of a shock, a wake-up call. 90% of the opium in the world, the heroin in the world, comes from opium from Afghanistan. And the Taliban had shut that flow down from about 2,800 metric tons to about 187 metric tons, virtually choking it off.
Which means 1% of global supply in 2001. And in 2002, after the U.S. invasion, they were producing 95% of the world's supply.
Well, and in Afghanistan, according to the UN numbers, the tonnage shot up from 187 to 3,600 metric tons per year, exceeding what the flow was before the Taliban came into power. And then today it's more like six thousand metric tons. So it's just huge, astronomical jump, and heroin's flooding cities, inner city youth, because it's cheaper now, because there's more volume, and somebody's making a lot of money.
Well, it's the CIA. The CIA has been running drugs for a very long time, even since Iran-Contra, when it was discovered that they were importing entire plane loads of cocaine into the U.S., distributing it in the streets, mostly in the black neighborhoods, and that kind of thing. And why would they do that, though? Here's why. Off-the-books revenue streams. Do you have any effing idea how expensive assassins are? Bro, you need a three-man team to take out one guy, minimum, and they need to have $250,000 minimum. And this is in the 70s. I was talking with a former assassin. I forget his name now. It was on the show. And that was how he described it, right? If you want to take out somebody, it's pretty frickin' expensive. And if you want to slip that by the taxpayer and the Defense Department budgeteers, you need an off-the-books revenue stream. And the great thing about drugs being illegal is that forces the prices right up, and it means that transactions can only happen in cash, which is untraceable.
And it turns out from the UN numbers that the profits from this opium exceed the oil companies' profits all put together, all the oil companies. I mean, that gives you a sense of the scale of this operation. And with that, Vinny, my apologies that I have to actually run right now, unfortunately.
Oh, well, I can probably give people about 3 minutes of wrapping up on this subject here. So give me 2 seconds. I just need to check my clock on this one, because it's getting down to this time where you've got to go, and I understand that. So you can just hang up and go. Thank you very much, Richard Gage. His website, ladies and gentlemen, ae911truth.org, and make sure you donate and sign the petition. All right, there's 2,800 and architects and engineers that have signed it, and there's 21,000 ordinary people like you who have signed it. We want to get that up pretty high, don't we, Richard? But anyway, thank you very much for your time, and fare thee well. You want to say some final words there,
Thank you so much, Vinny. Thanks, everybody. Yeah, the DVD is actually on YouTube now for free. People can see it. It's 9/11 Explosive Evidence. Experts speak out.
All right, that's going to be a good one there. Thank you very much, Richard. Now, to wrap up this 9/11 subject, ladies and gentlemen, I want to go on to discuss some of the ramifications further on after Afghanistan, notably the Iraq War. Okay, 1 million people. Okay, do you have any idea how many people that is? No, you don't. Okay, we're going to do a little exercise here. Close your eyes for a second or whatever, but just imagine yourself, okay, your whole body, you know, your eyes, your mouth, your nose, your feet, your arms, your torso, and so on and so forth. Think about your place in the universe, you know, where you go around the days and all the families that you have and the friends and so on and all these different people that you associate with, you know, your loves, your fears, your dreams, your hopes, and so on and so forth. And just think about that as one feeling, just you. Now, double that. Imagine you're thinking about you and somebody else. It might be your partner, it might be, you know, your kid or something like that. But again, think about their whole life and everything that they affect, everything that they are. And now think about 10,000 people. Whoa, you're getting big now, right? Think about 100,000 people. Think about 1 million people. So, right, so now you start to get the idea of what 1 million people kind of feels like. Now, they're dead, all right? And they were all Iraqi. They're dead now because you didn't expose 9/11 as an inside job. How does that feel? They're dead. Their country got invaded illegally, and now they're dead. Think about that, ladies and gentlemen, when you tuck yourself in at night and tell yourself that you love your children and that you love your country. They're dead. Now, in part because of you, because of your taxation, and because of the scumbaggery of the government, and because you're afraid to speak out about it, they're dead. 1 million of them. Every hope, every dream, every fear, every time they've ever laughed or had fun with their kids is gone. All right? Country invaded, and now it's got a hell of a lot of depleted uranium munitions in it. Okay? And that means a quarter of their babies are now born with deformities. You know what the average question is when your baby's born in America or New Zealand or anything like that? What sex is it? Is it a boy or a girl? You know what they say in Iraq? Is it normal? That's real sad, right? Just think about that, ladies and gentlemen, the next time you decide to say nothing when you could have said that 9/11 was an inside job. I'm Vinny Eastwood from The Vinny Eastwood Show. That's Vinny with a Y because it's the most important question in Eastwood. Like, go ahead, make my news. And thank you very much for going to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and subscribing to the PayPal and the Patreon and the Kiwi Bank, if you happen to be a New Zealander listening to this, the best alternative radio coming out of this country in this day and age. Love you very much, everybody. Thanks very much for your time.
News and information you can trust. This is American Freedom Radio. Freedom, freedom, American Freedom Radio. Radio. American Freedom Radio.
And I hope people support American Freedom Radio. And I hope people vote with their dollars and really understand the value of having American Freedom Radio. Because that's my family. If you love me at all, Jack Blood, support American Freedom Radio. Like, my family has literally disowned me in American Freedom Radio. Danny and Don and those guys, those are my actual family. So please, please support these guys because they have all the technology. They have all these great things that they're going to do, but obviously they can't do it all by themselves. So not only would I like to see you support them, I'd like to see you retweet them and repost them and really get involved and get on the bandwagon, so to speak, on doing that do-it-yourself promotion, because they're a do-it-yourself radio network, and we just need that so much.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule 1 drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
We all know that they're not telling us the truth. So stand up for your rights, demand the real medicine, and your right to use it and grow it. This is Rick Sensen, and you're listening to American Freedom Radio.
Yo, what's up? Check this out.
The voice of the revolution. American Freedom Radio. American Freedom Radio.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship.
Be quiet.
Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow, friendships to flourish, with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom, and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio@ymail.com. Vaccines, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics, no taboo topics, no fear of doom, no fear of doom. We are American Freedom Radio, American Freedom Radio.